Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. We spend a lot of time talking about how important it is to take care of your mental health. Therapy is an excellent way to do that. BetterHelp is an affordable mental health care option that fits right into your busy schedule. Just answer a few quick questions about your needs and preferences, and BetterHelp will match you with one of the thousands of experienced mental health professionals in their network. You can talk to your therapist over text, chat, phone, or video. You get to pick what works best for you, your comfort, and your schedule. If you feel like your therapist isn't the right fit, BetterHelp makes it easy to switch to someone new at no additional cost. So give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. BetterHelp is offering our listeners 10% off their first month of therapy. Just go to betterhelp.com/musicspeaks to get started. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/musicspeaks to get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Like so many of you, we battle depression during life's many ups and downs.
Music has always been there to help us through the tough times that we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music.
Interview artists and bands.
Break down genres and music news.
Review artist biographies.
And much, much more.
You're listening to the When Words Fail Music Speaks podcast.
Hey, everybody. This is James Cox, your handicapped host on the When Words Fail Music Speaks podcast, where we fight depression with the power of music. And I have another interview today. He is a great guy, great person. He is George Aitken. Did I get that right?
That's right.
Yes. Usually I get that wrong. So. He is from a band called The Agency, led by he is the whole band, correct? So, yeah.
Well, it's kind of like Gordon Sumner calls himself Sting. I call myself the agent, because calling myself George Adrian is not really terribly interesting. I wanted something that was a little bit mysterious, but yes, I'm the singer-songwriter, and I bring in a lot of wonderful, skilled musicians to help me realize everything that I want to do, which is, I guess, part of what we'll talk about today.
But you explore Gen X and millennial themes of love, loss, parenthood, and political against through meticulous crafted chamber rock. That's what I got, yeah. But your music blends pop sensibilities with progressive elements. So, did I get that right?
Yeah, I think that's...
That's
how I brand it. So, yeah, that's a pretty good summary of my bio, yeah, I would say.
Nice. Yeah, because I find it interesting that like, one-man bands have, like, you must have, like, a whole knowledge of, like, how to play multiple instruments. Right.
Well, if you want to go back to, like, just talk about my musical past. Yes. I got all into, okay, I took music lessons as a kid. I was obliged to take piano lessons. I learned the chords. I learned that, you know, C is the first chord, and then F is the four chord, and G is the five chord. So I knew some basics of music theory, but I never practiced. I mean, like so many kids who take lessons, the parents are like, you got to practice. And the kids are like, oh, but I'm playing outside. And then you end up like rushing to practice 15 minutes before the teacher comes so that you don't make a total fool of yourself.
Right.
So a bit like that, I was kind of obliged to do that through eighth grade. And then, I stopped. But the thing is, when you get into your teen years and you develop your own personality and you find out what you really like and dislike, you develop your own taste in music. Mm-hmm. And that's when I really fell in love with classic rock. And so, you know, as a kid, I always think about, like, it's the family in the station wagon, right? And fighting over what radio station is going to be on. Because those were before the days of even Walkman or anything like that. It was just, you wanted to hear music with the family. You were in the car or even in the house, you know, with the record player. I remember my parents putting on Abbey Road or whatever and listening to that stuff. So my parents were born in the 50s. They raised us with, you know, the Beatles and especially the oldies. Like, my mom was a freak for the oldies, like even stuff in the late 50s and early 60s, kind of even pre-Beatles stuff.
Right.
So that was, so my parents, I mean, growing up in the New York area, that was CBS FM 101.1, Cousin Brucey, you know? Cousin Brucey was like a member of the family for us because we spent so much time listening to that station in the car. And that was the oldies. And then the Beatles. And then, of course, when we were kids, we wanted to hear Z100, WPLG, 95.5, those were the pop stations, top 40, right?
Yeah.
And so, but then when you become a teenager, then it's like, no, I want K Rock. I want NEW. Those were the classic rock stations, right?
Yeah,
So
the good
it
stuff.
like that. And so the point is, as somebody who studied a little bit of music, who, okay, I sang in the choir in school, I was in played saxophone in the school band for a few years, and I had the piano lessons. But then you start liking songs, from rock bands, and you're developing, you're discovering this on your own. And then you say, oh, that's a really cool song. I wonder how to play that song. So I would go to the piano and try to find out. These days, you just go online and search, chord chart for whatever song. In those days, you either had to either go to a music store, okay, and buy the sheet music if you could find it, or you had to figure it out by ear, or you had to hang out with other people who knew and loved the same music and figure it out together, right? So that was kind of the experience. And so when I went away to college, that was the first time I got a guitar. And I basically taught myself to play the guitar with horrible technique, just basically transferring what I knew from the piano to the guitar. So, like, okay, I'll learn the basic. Oh, this is A minor, this is E major, this is F major, this is C major. Right? So I learned all of that stuff. But and then it's just like, oh, well, I know how to play the song on the piano. Let me just figure out how to play it on the guitar. And then it didn't take long for me to say, well, geez, if this is great, I'm going to write some songs, I'm an adult now, I had a crush on this girl. Let me write a song about it. I kind of like that. And that's how it starts in those days. And so I started writing songs. The thing is, James, like in those days, it was like either you're going to be a rock star with millions of adoring fans, or you're just going to be, some guy who's playing the local bar until he's, in a wheelchair, right? And it was so that was not a very aspirational thing. So it was either you're going to be one of those people that becomes a star, or you're going to be a never, a has been, or a never will be, right? More like a never will be, right? And like, that wasn't very desirable. So there was that concept that unless somebody's going to invest millions of dollars into you and turn you into a star, you're kind of wasting your time. There's no future in this. It's just a hobby. So I kind of treated it like that. But I had my little demo cassette player, recording demos on the guitar and on the piano and stuff. And then eventually, digital recording came out in the late 90s, and that became ex well, it was probably out before then, but it became accessible to regular people. So I remember I got this my cousin and I, because my cousin went to Manhattan School of Music. He was really the musical prodigy in the family. Amazing saxophone player, even though he never really liked playing the saxophone, but you played the saxophone, it was like, well, then you're going to become a jazz musician. But he was like me, he loved rock and pop music and all of that kind of stuff. So we played in the band together at some point when we were both at college. And I had, he had written songs, I had written songs, other guys that we formed a band with had written songs. He said, well, let's make a demo tape, let's spend one summer, that'll be our project. And so I bought, it was for, I think, for $1,200. Just crazy when you think about it now. It was called the Fostex DMV DMT-8. It was an 8-track digital recorder. Now, previously he had an old Tascam 4-track recorder, which everybody had back in the, I guess in the early 90s. But when it became digital, it's like, wow, suddenly the recording quality was so much better. And we had 8 tracks. Oh my God, 8 tracks. That was like mind-blowing for us. So we made a demo tape that summer using that. And that was fun, because that was the first time really trying to realize something. Now, of course, we didn't know anything about placing microphones or having proper microphones or mixing or anything like that. So it was kind of very, very amateurish. Because again, in those days, to go into a studio, you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars, to go to get in there. And because the record company, that was a whole industry concept of the way you would get into a studio and managing it and renting the equipment and all that stuff. It was a bonanza where those companies and the people affiliated were making tons and tons of money. And there were jobs to be had, studio techs and things like that. So it was a hobby, moved on with life, got a job, eventually got me, fast forward 15, 20, 25 years. And then the pandemic happened. And when the pandemic happened, like a lot of people, sales of music equipment went through the roof during the pandemic, because everyone's like, well, I'm sitting at home, and damn it, I always wanted to learn how to play the guitar. Or I always wanted to learn how to play the piano. So suddenly everybody's finding that they had this inner child that wanted to learn. So for me, the thing was, because I wasn't traveling for work and the house was full of people all day long because I work from home. I always have worked from home.
Yeah.
I didn't have any me time. Like during the day, I would just, whenever I want, go over to the piano and tickle the ivories for a bit, pick up my guitar and do whatever I wanted to do, and then go back to my desk and do some more work. I had a flexible way of working like that. But suddenly the kids are in the house all day with, homeschooling, and there was just too much commotion, and I had no time to just experience music and play music for fun the way I like to. So what I ended up doing was putting the kids to bed, and then I would go to bed really early. I would go to bed, put the kids to bed at 9. I would go to bed at 10 myself, and then I would wake up at like 2, and I would be up from 2 to 4, or 2 to 5 in the middle of the night, because that was the only time where I had peace and quiet. I said, you know what? I took the guitar and I went back to those demos that I had from 20 and 25 years ago. I said, all right, let me listen to these songs. Some of them are so cringy, I can't even bear to listen to them. But some of them was like, wow, that's really good. I mean, I still like that. If I wrote that song today, I would be proud of it. So what I did was I went back and revisited those songs and developed them a bit more with everything that I learned about music in those intervening 25 years, because my technique did get a little bit better and I learned a little bit more about how to structure things and how to play them and how to work out fingerings on the guitar and whatnot. But also my maturity in life. I mean, I was a lot, when you're 45 compared to when you're 20 or 25, you know a hell of a lot more about life, about love, what it's like to lose, what it's like to win, what it's like to have people who really depend on you, and all the responsibilities of parenthood. So all of that kind of came back and was rechanneled even into those old arrangements of songs I had written before. And at that point, I started working on Fiverr with musicians, because I thought, well, wait a second, if I'm sitting at home and you're sitting at home, all the best musicians in the world are also sitting at home.
Didn't you write yeah.
So that's when you started to realize, okay, yes, everyone wanted to, go on Sweetwater Sound or whatever and start buying guitars and learn how to play the guitar. But people also said, hey, so and so, I'm going to hire you to play guitar on my song, on my track. Or, I don't have a drummer. Can you record the drum track for this? Or I need a bass player. I need a rhythm section for this track. And so that's when I started getting into that and realizing that, wow, these are like guys who play on Grammy-winning records and they
Right.
don't cost a lot of money. So the
That's the
industry
best thing
changed
of
so
all.
much from the
Right.
way that I thought about it when I was young, which is, oh, if you don't have a record deal and spending hundreds of dollars, you have no hope. Suddenly, like, wait a second, this is a lot more inexpensive and a lot more reasonable than I thought.
Yeah.
So that's when I made contact with my friend Dan Feisley, who's a professional bass player and owns a studio out in Northern California, the Bay Area. And he and I were great friends and music friends kind of since we were in high school, and I had always kept in touch with him. And I said, hey, I started doing this stuff. And he said, all right, well, send me some of the stuff you're working on. And he said, okay. He goes, now, what did you pay these musicians? I'm like, well, I paid, whatever, $80 to $70 for this. He goes, well, frankly, for what you're paying, the quality is better than I would expect. It's not super professional level. He said, but I'll tell you this. If you want to take it a little bit further, okay, basically to hire a studio level professional, okay, who could play on records of Grammy-winning artists,
Right.
it's basically $500 a day. He's like, so if you want to invest a little bit more money, come out here. I'll put together a band for you. We'll put you in a great studio with amazing acoustics and proper setting to record rock drums, because you need a big enough room to record rock drums. It's like,
Right.
if you really want to do an album, let's do it the right way, and I'll help you do that. And that's what I ended up doing with that first project, which was the mashup covers, because I thought, okay, I have these babies that I've been nurturing for 25 years, but I thought, I really don't know what I'm doing. I've never been in a recording studio before. And because, again, with experience in life, you know that when you're young, you think everything's going to go great the first time, and the world is your oyster and you're going to be successful right away. And with age, you realize that doesn't really happen. If it does, it's just dumb luck. So you have to plan for mistakes to happen and things to be inefficient. And so what I realized was, you know what, before I go and take my babies into the studio, why don't I work on songs that other people have done and make the rookie mistakes on someone else's
There
music?
you go.
But because I like to do things in a creative way, I thought, okay, if I'm going to do covers, I need to do covers that are going to blow people's minds.
Right.
Because I'm not a person who believes, I think the cover song is an art form. I think there have been some of the greatest songs in the pop and rock canon have been cover songs, but they've been ones that took the original concept of the singer-songwriter or the band or the artist that originally did it and took it in a whole other direction, either even a different genre or a different tempo or a different harmonic structure, or did something that people said, I can't even believe that's the same song. And I think that's a wonderful thing to do. So I thought, I want to do that. And I thought, This whole idea of mashups, taking two songs that are from
Putting
different genres, different eras, and putting them together. And a lot of DJs do this, right? This is a
it.
common thing. And some of them are amazing. I mean, the way they splice things together, like the vocal of this song with the backing track of this song and the rhythm of another song. It's really amazing what some of those guys do. But I'm not a DJ. I'm a person who believes in live music, who
Oh,
believes in
yeah.
real recording of music, not sampling. So I thought, okay, let us replay all of these songs. So I put
Yes.
these arrangements, and I worked it out like a crazy person. It was me figuring out measure by measure, okay, how can we transition from this song to that song, and how do we have to change a little bit of the bass line to make sure it doesn't clash and all of that stuff. And again, I had really talented musicians helping me to do all of that, but that was really like a mad scientist endeavor. So I went to the studio and made these mashups. And it was so much fun doing that because, again, going back to the Family Station Wagon, okay, I fell in love with classic rock and progressive rock. That was really my thing. But I had always been a fan of classical music. And because I sang in choirs, I was exposed to classical music and the pop music of the 80s. Okay, at the time, you made fun of Madonna and Michael Jackson. But when you look back on it now, in your late 40s, you're like, that was my childhood. I love hearing those songs.
Right.
And then in the 90s, right? I was very snobbish about I'm a 70s rock, I'm a classic rock person. I don't listen to this grunge stuff in the 90s. This is modern. It's not, I'm too good for that. But all the stuff, Pearl Jam and Nirvana and all that stuff, that was part of our growing up in the 90s. And so
Right.
that's in there too. So all of those things came together. And again, when you're older, you realize, you're not the purist you were when you were young. You realize, hey, all of this is great music. And that was on a musical level. When I started breaking these songs down and realizing, wait a second, a song like Roundabout by Yes, which is like a staple of early 70s classic rock, progressive rock, which is like very considered to be very highbrow, nerdy of popular music. And then a song like Jean by Michael Jackson, which is considered just to be a pop song. Well, I mean, the chords of those two songs are the same.
Right.
So that's when I said, all right, well, you know what? I'm going to show these nerds and these purists that, you know what? All of these are just great songs. And I'm going to put them together in a way that makes people rethink their approach to them, saying, I never really considered it like that. Well, you took this very highbrow rock band and put it with I took King Crimson, which is like the nerdiest of all rock bands,
Right.
right? Whose fans are super diehard, super purist. And I mashed it up with, of all things, Taylor Swift. And so that
It
was like people like, I can't
was
believe this is even a thing. And that was
just
great. And one of the things that made me so happy was Robert Fripp, who's an icon on guitar, who's an icon of rock music since 1969 when the first King Crimson album came out. And he's been somebody who's never wavered in terms of like the quality of the music. And if the band's not going to put out something I'm proud of, then it's not going to exist. He has a thing on this thing called Cameo where you can pay a celebrity some
Yes.
money and they'll send you a greeting. Usually people saying, oh, say happy birthday to my
Birthday
boyfriend
or
or my
give me
mom.
like a
Happy
word of advice.
birthday.
Yeah.
Right. So he does this thing. And so you pay him whatever it was like 100 or 100 something
Something,
dollars. It
yeah.
wasn't a lot of money. But I noticed that he was doing that and he was taking his guitar and playing along to things that people sent him. So I sent him the mashup of King Crimson and Taylor Swift. And not only did he not write back to me saying, I'm going to sue you for mashing up my
Right.
song with my permission. Not only did he not do that, he actually jammed along and he played guitar solo over the middle section of the song.
Yeah.
And he was like, I think this is great that you're doing a mashup like this. Thank you for calling my attention to this. And I was like, me and the other guys who worked on it, who are also like huge fans of this guy, he's an icon.
Yeah.
And we were like pinching ourselves. Is this for
This is
real? Robert Fripp listened to
great,
our
you're
club and
right.
Taylor Swift and thought it was cool. So that was so fun. And all the people who reviewed that first album loved it. Some of them were like, I'm confused by this, doesn't make any sense, but this is crazy, but this is worth listening to. It makes you want to listen to it again, even try to understand what this guy was thinking. How could he possibly have put these things together? So that was fun for me. I really had fun doing it. And it was a tribute to those artists who nurtured me musically as well. And I really enjoyed doing that. And I'm really proud of that. But again, I'm a songwriter. I wanted to eventually get to my own material. And so that was a stepping stone. But coming out of that, James, I had so much more confidence going into the studio. And also, I had earned the confidence of the people who worked with me. Like, yes, George is not a professional musician like us, but he knows what he wants. And he knows how to give us directions so that we can do our job correctly. And I thought that was really interesting because at one point I was asking the guys in my band, that I hired to work on these sessions. I said, "Do you think for my next time we're in the studio, I should bring in a professional producer?" And they were like, "No, you should definitely not bring in a producer." I was like, "Really? Wouldn't that be?" He's like, "No, because George, you know what you want. When you come in with the chart, with the demo, you're able to give us direction, and it's easy to work with you because you tell us what you want, and then we're just able to apply our skills and take your vision and make it sound good. Now, of course, you don't know exactly how it's going to sound because that's why you're hiring us.
So you are
But
the
if you bring in a
producer,
producer,
you know?
well, yeah, I'm basically self-producing. But if I had brought in a producer, the guys are saying is we would have to listen to him. He would be the boss, and you would just be like turning over the keys to him, and that would be it. You don't want to surrender that control because you know what you want. Now, if you were just a singer-songwriter who didn't have a vision and didn't have a concept of the way he wanted the arrangement to sound, then at that point you need a producer because then it's like the band itself, if they're session musicians, they can't necessarily self-produce because they need someone to keep everybody in line. And so that's kind of the approach I took. And that's been working for me. So the guys I work with, we've gotten now to the point where we've been doing this over the we started in 2022, 2023, 2024. So if we go back to the studio later this year, it's the machine is getting to be really well oiled and they know what I want. They know the sound that I'm going for. And they've heard the final product of the stuff that we did and that it's well received. And that also makes people feel good and adds more confidence to the endeavor. So, I'm really, really happy with that. I'm excited to keep doing this.
It's awesome, yeah, because I love mashups too, and I'm sure you've referred to mashups before. You've actually with your own, some of my favorite mashups are is Ghostbusters with Thunderstruck.
All right,
It's
okay.
called it's I
I've heard that one.
yeah yeah Thunderbusters, and then my
Okay.
all-time favorite one would be Heard It Through Grapevine with Slayer's Sound of Heaven.
Yes, that's a great one. There's I think
That
there's a YouTuber called Bill McClintock who
yes,
does a
he
lot of
does.
this, right? He
Yes,
he's
he,
really great. I
yeah.
subscribe to his channel. I like his stuff. There's another one that was Jump by Van Halen with Imagine, John Lennon, which is
Really?
eerie. It's crazy. Really, really crazy.
That sounds like it
But
wouldn't work.
one of the ones that inspired me, and this is going back like more than 20
Years
years, it
ago, right?
was Eye of the Tiger and Craig David, Fill Me In, which was it's insane because Fill Me In is like this very kind of urban track, and Eye of the Tiger is bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, that's what it
And
was.
it's the mashup is incredible. That one really, really inspired me. So I mean, when I did the mashups, a lot of this were things that I had in mind. I mean, the obvious one is like "Nothing Else Matters" by the Moody by Metallica and "Nights of White" by the Moody Blues, which are like they're the same song. I mean, it's the same tempo, the same key, the same. It's both in the 6/8 meter. So that one, even since the 90s, I had that in mind. Like, oh, one day I want to put these d play these two songs together, and so I was able to do that. So that was a lot of fun. But then it came to time to do my own stuff. And some of those are also covers. Like the one that was just released at the end of April is a cover of "Blackbird" by the Beatles
That
from the
that's
White
what I that's what I was
Album,
asking about,
1968.
Blackbird, yeah. So what was it about that song that made you want to do that cover with that
Okay,
for
so
with
that I mean
okay,
that's always that's such a beautiful song, and it's such a simple song, but it's just so classic, and it just resonates throughout. I mean that's 1968,
That's
that's
it right
getting
there,
old
buddy.
now, right? That's
That's
what?
where it's at,
It's almost 6 years old now, right? Am I adding right? Yeah. So that's a song I always loved, but I thought, and this is kind of a gimmick. I didn't want it to be a gimmick, but I thought like that song is in a major key. It's in G major. And I thought, what if this song was in a minor key? And there's a lot of, again, this is a YouTube thing. What would the Growing Pains theme song sound like in a minor key? Or what would, whatever, name a song? What would Happy Birthday sound like in a minor key? And you have these guys, and some people are doing it, it's like a parody, like they're making fun of it. And there's some YouTubers that are very successful doing this. They have millions and millions of, they have millions of subscribers just doing these kind of what if type things.
It's
I
all
didn't want to feel like
TikTok.
that. I didn't want, that was not my intention. My intention was to make a new arrangement of the song. So it started out by going from a major key to a minor key, but then it took on a life of its own in terms of the way I changed the keys of the song and altered the melody of the song. And I thought in terms of, and this is again where we're covering, to me, covering a song is also an art form, because even though I didn't change in the lyrics of the song, I had in mind a reapplication of the meaning of the song, because the song was written to refer to the civil rights struggle of the 1960s. Blackbird, you were only waiting for this moment to arise, like, the black community rising up and civil rights and everything that was happening in the 60s. Thought, in our day and age, the thing that preoccupies people as a cause is everything around climate change and warming of temperature and the impact that has on the environment and on nature and all of that stuff. And again, coming back to the political side of things, I find that's just a terrible issue to discuss, because it's become such a polarized thing, and it's very hard for anyone to just agree. Like, well, doesn't everybody want to have beautiful, to enjoy the beauty of nature? Doesn't everybody want that and not have to feel like we're to be punished for that? And so I always thought, like, we have the wrong attitude towards it. It's either people that just want to put their head in the sand and say, no, everything's fine, humans can just do whatever they want, and other people saying, no, we have ruined the earth, we should punish ourselves, humanity is the virus. I think that's a horrible way to look
No,
at it. And
man,
so
right.
the way I looked at it is, human beings make a lot of mistakes, individually and collectively. But if there's one thing that we're able to do individually and collectively, it's to redeem ourselves. So I thought, instead of wanting to punish humanity and just remind us how bad we are, because yes, we have polluted and we have caused problems, and there are bad ecological impacts of all of that stuff. We can't deny any of that. But I believe those problems are all fixable. We just have to put our mind to it. And so I thought, I want to reposition this song in a more dramatic way. And it starts out in a minor key, such as, like, yeah, the situation is really, really bad. But then it transforms in the middle section of the song. There's a very dramatic climax in there. And then it goes back to a major key. And then it's saying, at the end, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Like, come on, guys, humanity can do this. If we stick together, we're not bad. We are good in our nature. We just have to put our mind to it, and we can fix it. And so I wanted the song, even though I didn't write the song, I didn't write the lyrics of the song, but I arranged the song, I felt, in a way that musically had meaning to me, but also in terms of reapplying the message of the song for, we're two generations beyond when it was written. And there are new challenges and new social causes that people have, about which people have concern. And I thought, take something classic and reapply it not only musically but also socially. That was part of my intention with that. And so, again, it's not enough these days to just be a songwriter or a recording artist. You also have to be a photographer, a video editor, a graphic
Everything.
designer, a social media guru, and all that stuff. So, like, what do you have to do these days? You don't go the old days. You put, oh, well, here's my album. No, you can't do that anymore. Now you have to put out a song and spend 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, finding a way to talk about your song and your social media every single day, so that eventually it might catch on, and people will go and then follow you on Spotify or subscribe or go to Bandcamp and buy it to stream it, or whatever. That's how you develop fans these days. And so the song comes out in song came out in late April. So up till the end of May or the beginning of June, when a new song comes out, every single day we'll be had a way to put a 60 second, 30 or 45 or 60 second video featuring the music of the song. But in it, whether it's a meme, whether it's a me performing it, me lip syncing it, something about the political message of the song, something about interviews, like, we'll take a clip of this interview and talk about it, using all of that to promote the song. And that's something that's a lot for artists to do. We would rather just pick up a guitar, go to the piano, and just play music all day and write more songs. But now I'm in a mode where I'm not spending time writing songs, because I'm spending time either practicing to be able to play the songs, knowing if I'm going to do a live performance video for whatever subscribers I have, or spending time making content every day to promote the music. And so that's, it's a lot of work, James. You know this because you're a podcaster. It's not enough to, oh, great, George and James had a chat, that's lovely. But then you got to go and edit it, you got to upload it, you got to trim it, you got to color correct it, you got to splice it and subtitle it. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into it.
Well, fortunately, I know exactly what you are meaning, because I am a music producer just recently, and I had a band working with me, and they did a cover of the Deftones' "My Own Summer," and so yeah,
All right.
it's very, very hard promoting yourself, so much so I stopped that promoting the song and just focused more on the podcast, because that's where my bread and butter come from.
And maybe one
Right.
day somebody will say, "Hey, is this James Cox, the producer that made this cover?" I'm like, "Yeah, dude, that's sweet, But yes, but like you
Yeah.
said, it's very hard getting everything, and I'm not rich by no means. I can't afford much, but I do what I do within my limitations, and I figured that you're similar to that thing too,
All of us are. All of us who
Yeah.
are self-produced. I mean, the good thing is people love. I mean, look, well, I'm complaining now. Oh, I have to be a graphic designer and I have to do all these
Nah.
things. But there's a. I mean, I always try to look at the positive side. The positive side is the music industry allows people like us to get our music out there, and anyone in the world can
Yes.
hear it. And
Yeah.
that's a wonderful, wonderful thing that wasn't the case in the previous generation when you
No.
had to go through, were gatekeepers in these record companies, and unless you had millions of dollars invested in you, you weren't able to do it. Now
Yeah.
you're able to do it for, okay, it's not for free, but there's kids in their bedroom making music, right? Now, the
Right.
quality can be good because they're not mixing and mastering it appropriately, but even, Billie Eilish and her brother are making all of that stuff. So, it doesn't have to be a super high budget production. And so that's encouraging. I love that part of it. And yes, okay, these are good problems to have. The fact that I have to spend time promoting all the music, but on the other hand, it enables people to hear it. And again, but I come back to the same thing all the time when I talk about being a songwriter. It's not when I was 18 years old and, oh, let me write this song for this girl and maybe that'll make her like me and she could be my girlfriend. That's Looking back on it now, that's kind of nonsense. And what
Right.
you come to realize is that as an artist, or for me as a songwriter, I'm writing the songs for myself and
Yeah.
myself alone. Now, I'm educating them. I mean, even songs that, as a father, that I've written about and inspired by each of my sons, one of which came out last month, one of them will be coming out in July. And those were, a wonderful labor of love because that's a gift to give to them. But I wrote those songs, I didn't write them for my sons. I wrote them for me, coming to terms with the emotions that you feel as a father, coming to terms with the responsibilities to be a father, coming to terms with all the fears you have as a father, watching your children grow up and wondering, are they going to be okay? Am I doing everything I can for them? Will I always be there for them? What if I'm not able to be there for them? Am I putting them on the right path? Those are all things that parents have to confront in addition to the daily challenges of parenthood. And I wanted to put that into song. And so the first one was written when my first son was just a newborn, and it was really that moment where they put that newborn baby in your arms. And it's,
Yeah.
a lot of dads have trouble admitting this because we try to act all cool, like we're in control of
Yeah.
everything. Oh yeah, I went,
Yeah.
like,
Yeah.
I went and I went and bought everything I needed, and the house is all padded and I have all the equipment I need. Like, that's what we're good at. We're providers, right?
Right,
But
right.
like the sheer reality of there's a life that you created that's in your arms right now, that was a pretty heavy thing. And I think if dads are honest, we're not at all ready for it when
No,
that moment hits a
I
new
don't
puberty.
think anybody would be ready for something as prominent as that, Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, and so the song was basically saying that. It's talking about how that you're holding this baby in your arms and it's basically thinking, do you even know who I am? I know who you are,
Right.
but do you
But do you
know
know
who
who
I am?
I am?
Do you know
Yeah.
who I am and why any of this matters, or am I just somebody holding you right now? I mean, when I'm talking to you or kissing you or hugging you, like, do you get it, or when are you going to get that? And then, extrapolating from that, am I doing it right? Am I going to be a good dad? Are you going to be proud of me one day that of the dad that I was?
Right.
And so that was the song written dedicated to him, and that was really inspired by those first early moments of being a dad, really looking at his role as a dad. When it came to my younger son, that song I wrote when he was about 2 years old. So it was more in the context of the family's growing. You see these two brothers, the kid is 2 years old, he's walking around, he's smiling, he's able to joke with you. So it's not the same thing. It's like he's responding and he's getting it all, and he has a personality, and you feel there's a give and take there, and he knows who you are. Not
Yeah.
like it was with the newborn. But in that song, I'm asking the question still, now I have two kids.
Yeah.
Does that mean that I love the first one half as much as I loved him before? And you come to realize, no, your
No.
time is limited. I mean, you only have 24 hours in a day and you're only one physical being. But your love is not divided like that. It multiplies for having another child. And so I thought that was the point I wanted to make there, and to say,
Yeah.
when I'm talking to him, does he's only two. He can't understand everything that I'm
Yeah.
saying to him if I would tell him. logically. This is, you know, these are feelings. This is why I love you so much. And these are the things I appreciate about you and all of that. But, you know, no, you just take him in your arms and you hug him and you kiss him and you smile at him. And, you know, that's your way of doing that. And also to say, in the song, I say, you know, appreciate your mom. I mean, you know, she can't control how much she loves you. And sometimes she's going to smother you, but that's what moms do.
Yeah,
But we as
they're
dads, you know, you're going to grow up and you think that we, you know, we boys think their dads have all the answers. And, you know, that's a lovely thing. But the point in the song was to also to tell him, you know, you might look at me as a hero, but I'm just a man. I'm just a guy trying to figure it out. I'm trying to do the best that I can for you as my son, as my children. And you also, as brothers, have to count on each other, you know, because you're all you got. You know, you got if when the chips are down, you know, you guys got to stick together and be loyal to each other. And then that, so that's the whole meaning of the song, you know, be loyal to each other, be loyal to love that we have as a family and all of that. So that was wonderful to be able to express my parental love in music as well. And then there's songs of covering all manner of things. The questions you ask yourself about the direction you're going in your life. Songs about songs
So,
about love, about relationships that work or that don't work.
how am I supposed to live without you is about
No, how am I supposed to live without you? That's another crazy cover. That's a cover of Michael Bolton's song from the 1990 or 1991.
Something like
And
something
you
crazy
know,
like
which
that,
is like everybody loves to make fun of that song because it's just such a
Everybody loves to make
cheesy
fun of my quote
arrangement.
because
It's
of
such
his
a cheesy
hair.
90s, yeah, and his like hair and all of that stuff. But when I just one day I said, you know, actually listen to the melody of the song. It's a great song. And I thought, I want to do that in a rock. I want to turn that song into a rocker. You know, I
There you
want that song
go.
to rock. And the funny thing was, Fernando Perdomo, who's like my go-to guy for guitar, he's an amazing, amazing musician. And he told me when I brought that song to him, he goes, well, George, you do realize that Michael Bolton originally was a badass rock and roll guy. I'm like, what? He's like, he played in the late 70s. He was supposed to be the next Lou Gramm. He was supposed to be the next bluesy, badass, long hair, rock and roll, you know, front man. And it didn't work out for him. And then he ended up going in, obviously went in a very, very different
Well,
direction.
yeah, very
But
bad.
his roots are badass rock and roll. And so I thought, wow, you know, I'm gonna, you know, that's a wink and a nod to him and his past to turn his cheesy Light FM arrangement into a proper, you know, rockin' arrangement. So that was really, really cool. So that song came out, and then Proud to Be, which is the song I wrote when my older son was
Yeah,
an
with
infant.
the
And then
first one.
Blackbird comes out end of April. And then the other song, the next one after that will be in the beginning of June. It's another cover of More Than Words by Extreme.
Oh my
Okay,
God, I
I
love that
remember it's from the early
song.
90s. In case that's a song that's played very classic kind of iconic guitar arrangement with that slap back guitar playing. I did the song on the piano. And also I turned it into a much sadder kind of a setting of a song because I felt like when you listen to the lyrics of More Than Words, you listen to the sound of it and the way that they harmonize and the way the guitar is playing, and you feel like it's a song saying, hey, it's great to be in love. But when you actually just read the words of the song, it's not a song about love. It's more a song about desperation and disappointment of somebody saying, God, I've tried everything and nothing works. Like, there's no way to get through to you. There's no way to get you to understand the way I'm trying to love you. And I don't know what else to do. What, you know, I need more than words. You can't just say I love you and think that everything is going to be fine. It's not enough for me. So I felt like I wanted to do a musical arrangement that better expressed that desperation, because I felt like it's a song about desperation. And then after that, in July, on my son's birthday, the younger one, that's when the other
That's
song,
okay,
will come out. And then there's, you know, then there's another series of songs coming out every 6 weeks or so until we get to the end of the year. And then the end of the year, I will wrap all that up into an album.
Nice. Great. We get a full album with that. Go,
Yeah.
but going back real fast to Michael Bolton and
Yeah.
go from rock to blues. Did you know that Kenny Rogers was in a heavy metal band called First Edition?
Really?
Yeah. So
Wow.
he went from rock to country. You know, Kenny Rogers did. So I think thought that was
Amazing.
kind of cool. But I don't cover so I do have a question about it. So you do these wonderful covers, right? And I know doing the covers is doing a a service to the artist and yourself, right? But I
You'd
know,
think so. Not everybody agrees.
fair enough, right? But I know that there are some original artists that doesn't like their song being transformed like to the max, okay?
Yeah.
So how do you put your twist and leave their song intact the way they did it?
Well, I guess it's this is a we're veering into legal territory here
Right,
because
right.
if you don't mind, I'll give it like because I had to study all of
Sure.
this like a
Oh
student, like a law
yeah.
student,
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
to be able to do the mashup. Because just by the way, the mashup covers album is only on YouTube. Because all right, so let me just take it back. A lot of times people hear a cover of a song on the radio and they think, well, if, how much money did you have to pay to cover that song? Like, do you have to pay the Beatles to do a cover of Hey Jude, for example? And the answer is yes, asterisk, but it's like,
Technically,
yeah, technically you do, but it's just a few dollars,
it's
right? It's called a mechanical
royalties.
license. Like, it's automatic that you get a license that's automatically applied to, it's automatically given to you. And that gives you the right to do your own master of the song. It means you're able to record the song and you own the master. So now you have the royalties in two, you have the royalties that come from the performance of the song, which is yours because you are the performer of it. Okay. You re-recorded it. And then you have the publishing royalties, which are retained, of course, by the original artist. So to your point, yes, they should be happy because if your song becomes popular,
Then they're
they make money. They make
they
half the
get
money.
paid,
Like, you make half the money for performing it, and they make half the money from having written it. The trouble that comes in there is when you do mashups like I did, because in that case, that's called an interpolation, okay? Which means you're changing the intent of the songwriter. Like the songwriter didn't intend for his song to be
Mashed with
mixed with
something,
another song, okay? So let's say I mixed, like, take the example, I mixed Nothing Else Matters and Nights in White Satin. So I can't just say, hey, here's my song. I'll just give 50% of it to Moody Blues and 50% of it to Metallica.
That's 100%. So you get,
Yeah, well, I mean,
yeah.
but even
Well, yeah,
on
oh,
the
okay,
what on
yeah.
the publishing side. Well,
Right.
what if they didn't agree? What if Metallica listened to it and James Hetfield said, no, I think 52% of the song belongs to me. Right? So now you're in a legal space, right? So James, what you have to do is you have to hire either lawyers or what they call clearing agencies to go and hustle the people who own the rights of the song and get them to agree that, oh, this guy, the agency, wants to do he wants to mash up your song with this other song. Okay, well, let me hear it. No, I refuse. I'm not gonna let him do it. I don't want to do that. Or yeah, I'll do it. How much is he gonna pay me? Well, you're gonna have to negotiate with Justin Hayward, who wrote Nights in White Satin. He wants this much. Well, oh, but there's, and then so those guys would have to agree on all that. But you think all that's for free? I would have to pay lawyers to do all of that. And
Big
coming back to my
time.
original point, I mean, if it costs $500 to hire a really professional studio musician for a day, you know what it
Imagine a
costs to hire a
lawyer.
music lawyer for an hour? About
God.
$350.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like an hour and a half of a lawyer's time is equal to a whole day in the studio with a professional musician. I mean,
That's not
so
even right,
that's a no-brainer for me. But because YouTube has their content ID system, so YouTube basically made master agreements with the big record companies to say, look, guys, people want to do covers of your songs and post them on YouTube. Okay. So you're not going to get that genie back in the bottle. You're going to have to let them do it. So here's what we'll do. We will automatically, nobody's going to go through and spend the money. Some kid in his bedroom playing, Hotel California is not going to go hire a lawyer to get the Eagles to give him the right to do that. Because
They
technically,
can't.
if you do a video, it's called a sync license. That's a whole other ball of wax. But
No.
YouTube basically said, listen, record companies, suck it up, forget about the sync license. We will use our content ID. We'll use our technology in order to determine whose song is being played, and we will automatically allocate the royalties that whatever streaming royalties come from that song to you. In fact, you can demonetize it. The person who doesn't can't won't get any money if you don't want them to.
Right.
And so almost all the artists said, yeah, okay, that's a cool deal. That's fine. Now you have some jerks like Don Henley, okay, who say, no, I don't want anyone covering my songs. And you think like
Why?
why? I mean, if anything, it will make people
Because,
discover the original and you'll end up making more money. And I'm just like, get over yourself. Okay, the Eagles were an iconic band, that's wonderful, but okay, good for you. Part of one of the projects I have in mind is what I'm going to do is I what I'd like to do is do a whole album of Eagles of Don Henley covers. But instead of doing them very professionally, and what I'm gonna sing them out of tune. I'm gonna have them played out of time and out of tune, with wrong notes all over the place, and I'm gonna distribute them as covers. I'm gonna ruin the songs, but technically I'm not veering from the original intent of the song. I'm keeping all the lyrics and I'm keeping all the harmonic structure and the rhythm of the song intact,
But you're
just
still
not
singing
playing
it
it very
out of
professionally.
tune.
And there's not a thing he's gonna be able to do about it. So that's gonna be my revenge on Don Henley for his, I think, very short-sighted way of looking at it.
Yeah, I don't
But yeah,
understand.
I think covers are a wonderful thing. I think it's great to see some of these artists, and it's great when, I mean, this is my pipe dream that one day one of these original artists will come across one of the covers I did and say, like Robert Fripp did, "Wow, this is really cool." I think it's great that somebody's doing this, because those guys pay attention. I mean, we think that they're stars and they're living the life of the rich and famous. They don't care. They pay attention because you've seen some of these YouTubers, like guys like Rick Beato. I mean, everybody loves Rick Beato's when he did those, What Makes the Song Great. And he gets contacted by some of the artists who said, "Hey, I saw your video, or my studio tech watched your video and sent it to me, and I think it's great that you're doing that." And sometimes they'll send corrections. Actually, there was one where he's the organist Matthew Fisher from Procol Harum, who played on Whiter Shade of Pale, was one of the most iconic Hammond organ lines of all time, sent him a note saying, "Actually, there's a mistake there. The bass notes are this and that at the turnaround at the end of the verse." So I think that's great that these wonderful musicians that nurtured us with their music are able now to look back and respond to what we do with what they gave us. And find something interesting there. I think that's great. And I think every cover artist dreams of that.
I'm amazed that people reach out to Rick and correct him instead of getting mad with him, just like you said. Yeah, so I don't know why Don Henley doesn't want anybody to cover his song, because
Yeah, well, but then there's other problems
if
like.
they get paid, he gets paid too, right?
Yeah, but
So
then there's
we're
other ones that the other ones that are mysteries, like Jimi Hendrix. Like, well, Hendrix has been dead for a long time, but his estate,
It's
like,
just
subject closed, not gonna happen. No covers of Jimi Hendrix. Okay, well, that's crummy, but okay.
And I'm sure it's the same thing with Prince and Michael Jackson. Well, I guess Michael Jackson's still
Well, I mean,
being
the
made to
best
this
thing is because
day.
one of the songs I did, I said it was
Well,
Billie Jean, Jackson, and when I originally spoke to some of these clearing agents, say, okay, what if I was to invest a little bit of money and see if I could get it? And I called his clearing agent and said, "Okay, well," they're like, "All right, so what songs are you talking about?" I'm like, "Okay, well, this Taylor Swift." They're like, "Oh, no problem. We can get that cleared for you." Michael Jackson.
That's hard, all right?
Dead silence on the line. Like, "You still there?" He's like, "Yeah, dude. Michael Jackson's estate is just gonna hang up the phone on us. Like, you have no hope of getting Michael Jackson to an interpolation for you."
I'm sure
So,
Prince is the same way,
it is what it is. I put them on YouTube. And if the industry changes, I mean, I do see some signals of things changing there, because mashups are a thing right now. And now
Big
there's
thing,
apps, actually, James, that have come out that allow, it's almost like a video game, but it's an audio game where you can actually use the original masters and create your own mashups in an app. So there's one guy who used to work for Spotify who set up this startup, and he's like, "Look, the legacy record companies, the only way they're going to stay in business and keep making money is they got to milk that old catalog for every drop they can get out of it, because they're not making money on new artists the way they used
No.
to. The only thing that
No, no,
I
they're
hope that
not.
one day there'll be holographic technology that people can go to a theater and see some hologram of Elvis Presley or whatever, and they
They
can still
have
make
holograms right
money
now.
out of the catalog,
We saw Ronnie James Dio hologram and Tupac hologram,
right?"
but
So
they're not
like
making any money off
that's all they
those.
got. They don't have any. They have very, very little creative stuff to offer. The A&R is not finding wonderful artists that are captivating the imagination of people, with exceptions like, okay, Taylor Swift is a phenomenon, and there's a few things like that. But rock bands, to be a rock star, that's like a colloquial expression now. It has nothing to do with playing rock music anymore. There aren't really not any more big rock bands. U2, and but those are also U2's been around for like nearly 50 years now. I mean, so these mashups are a way that the record companies and the original artists can still make money. So they may find a way to just give it up and say, "Fine, let them people do mashups." It's the only way we're going to make money.
That's the only thing that they can do,
Well, not the only way, but it's a new way to make
Well,
money,
it's a
because
new way,
otherwise,
I feel like this subject is right on par with the movie companies. You know, they're remaking everything, you know, and it's getting boring, stale, you know. And it's like you gotta find something new, dude, to make more money, you know. And Disney just messes it up totally now, you
Yeah,
know.
you know, it's the one counterexample of that. The one thing I wish would have been made was Back to the Future, which is my all-time favorite movie.
Yeah,
And it was
the
like
guy
the most
said he's
thing, like
never.
they had the Don Henley, Jimi Hendrix
Yeah,
estate act through,
nope,
which
we're
is,
not doing it.
you know, you until we're in the grave, it's nobody's remaking this movie. But I thought that would have been great to have like a Snapchat using Marty McFly go back to the 80s. Like instead of the 80s, it would be like the 2015 back to 1985. I think that would have been a really, really cool concept. Okay, they didn't want to do it, but you know, that would have been really, really fun. But I mean, some of the stuff, and you know, again, the Mashups album was a nostalgia exercise as well. It was a tribute to all the music, like I said, the 80s, the 60s, the 70s, and all the stuff that influenced me as a young person and became part of my musical DNA, if you like. I think like that's kind of the musical equivalent of what Cobra Kai did, taking Karate Kid and rebranding it and redoing it, and that was
That
so
was
clever.
great. Yeah.
They did it in a clever way. It wasn't the way some of these Hollywood things, like, oh, here we go, another reboot of the same comic books from the 1950s.
Cobra
They're
Kai
really
is
doing
like
the Superman movie. They're really doing the
extension
Batman
in.
movie. But the way Cobra Kai was done was clever.
Then
It was clever.
it.
It was a parody and it was a new thing at the same time. And I thought that was great. And I think that's the kind of creativity I like to see. And that's what I try to do with my own covers and the musical analog of that. Take the thing and turn it into something new that people will appreciate from the original, but also see something new in it. And that's kind of the approach that I take.
Nice. Well, we're running out of time. I'd love to talk to you for a few more hours, but
Of course.
I do have three more questions for you. Okay,
Of course.
so George, back in 1980 something. Okay, so let's say we're like 14, 15, 16 years old. Okay, we're in your room. You're looking around your four walls. What music posters are we looking at, if any?
It was those bands, those progressive rock bands that I fell in love with as a teenager. Yes, and King Crimson and
King
Genesis.
Crimson, Brit,
I remember buying not posters. I had some posters, but also what I did is I went and I bought the original LPs and I just ripped them open and my college dorm room was stuck with all of the great albums that I loved. The front and back, the fully stretched out album cover stuck to the wall with the Funtac. That was my college dorm room was filled with early 70s, late 60s, early 70s classic rock, progressive rock music. Yes,
I love it. I love it. I love it. Next question is going to be a hard question for you. Okay.
Okay.
So we're going to do a Mount Rushmore of musicians that you admire. You got four of them. Who are your favorite four musicians
Oh
of
man,
all
that's hard.
time?
That's hard. Okay, but if I'm Mount Rushmore, okay, I have to put Johann Sebastian Bach would definitely be up there.
That's fair.
Okay.
Fine. Okay.
I would put him from, you know, representing the classical era. I would put come on, you
I
have
know
to
it's
pick
hard,
these. How can I
man.
pick between John Lennon and Paul McCartney? That's really hard. I would have to put, I guess in the end, I would have to put John Lennon just because his strength as a songwriter was—he wasn't as anywhere near as skilled a musician as Paul McCartney, but he had something uncanny in his songwriting that I aspire to, and I feel like it still escapes me. Even the songs that I'm most proud of, I listen to some of John Lennon's songs, and I'm like, how the hell did he come up with that? I would
It's amazing.
wish that one day somebody would hear one of my songs and say, "Wow, that's like, how did he
How
come
did
up
he
with
come
that?"
up with that?
I probably would put John Lennon up there. I would put Yes, being my all-time favorite band, and John Anderson, the lead singer, I would put John Anderson. He's my musical hero, so I would have him up there. And the fourth one, oh boy,
Fourth one.
the fourth one. It would probably be. You know who it would be? It would either be Daryl Hall or John Oates,
Okay, Hall and Oates.
because
We'll
that
just
was
put
the
them in there together. How about that?
80s, out of touch. Like that
Yeah.
was my
Man
favorite
eater.
song. And those guys, like again, great musicians, but they knew how to do it in a. They came from a rock background, a rock and a soul background as well. But they knew how to make great pop music, and it's a pity the whole thing fell apart with them because of money. I mean, for heaven's sake, guys, it's just money. God, get it together. I mean, how stupid! You know, your legacy
Well,
is the joy that you gave people with your music, not the money that you have or don't have in the bank. I mean, I just. That's so upsetting and disappointing to me. But yeah, one of those guys. I would say probably one of those guys for George's Mount Rushmore. Maybe not
Yeah.
the all-time greatest musicians that anyone else would say, but for me, yeah, I think that would be a good representation of the things that nurtured me as an artist and as a music lover even.
I feel Hall & Oates is going to come back,
You
because
think?
Blink, I hope the guy did. Okay, so Blink-182 just reformed together,
Okay.
because I think Mark had cancer, and then that's what brought him back together. It's
Okay.
sad. It's so sad that something like that brings them back together. But I have a feeling that Hall and Oates will come back sometime. I'm not
Okay.
soon, but
All right.
hopefully,
Well, I mean, we can hope. But okay, Daryl Hall became the more visible part of it. But and as I mentioned, Fernando Perdomo, who's my right hand when it comes to this, he's a huge Hall & Oates fan. Huge. And he's like, look, let's be honest, Daryl Hall solo stuff without John Oates never matched up to what they did together as a duo. Even if Daryl wrote the song, somehow when he's with John Oates, it's on the music is on another level. And he's right about that.
Yeah, it's amazing how it works so much well. Like, 'cause Axl Rose and Slash, right? When Slash left, Guns N' Roses were not Guns N'
Right.
Roses. It's because you could form super groups, but it won't work out in the end unless you got those core main people. And I find that so fascinating.
Well, that you some I mean when the it's funny that Queen as a band, when you look at like streaming stats and how the classic bands are faring. I mean, Queen might be even as more popular than the Beatles because for some reason Queen's songs for a younger generation that's streaming music has retained its popularity. So when that Bohemian Rhapsody came out, and especially some of my female friends who are fans of Queen and they're like and Freddie Mercury, I'm like, okay, but you're treading on very, thin ice here with me because I'm a classic rock
Because
snob.
it's
Okay, so
Queen,
when
bro.
you equate Queen as a band with Freddie Mercury as a singer, you're really taking a big risk there with me. That's not something I'm gonna say. So a friend of mine, I remember there was a great quote thing he put on social media. He goes, and he's also a recording artist, and he said, "To all of those friends who recommend that I go and see Bohemian Rhapsody, we are no longer friends."
Is that yeah, because there's some it's
No, look, it
so
was an entertaining film, and I think there were some really great elements to it. But it's like a lot of these films, it oversimplifies things, and the music nerds like us will just, come
Yeah,
on,
cool.
that's not
You're gonna
realistic.
be doing it right, yeah. Okay, so since you've been tweeting, I got a question just formed in my head. Who do you think is better on the microphone now? Paul Rodgers when he was a Queen, or Adam Lambert now? I think Paul Rodgers is a
Really?
supreme. Yeah, I love. I mean, Free. I mean, you gotta admit that band was bad company.
Frankly, I can't comment on that because I haven't heard enough of the two singers to be able
That's
to compare.
fair.
I only have a peripheral, like just having seen clips. So I can't weigh in on that. But I thought it was cool that I mean Adam Lambert coming out of American Idol and all that stuff. I thought that
I
was
mean,
cool
that was a
that
big deal.
because I thought that was a nice way to bridge the gap with the generations. But I mean, this whole thing of like picking YouTube sensations and putting them in the band. I mean, there was a great Simpsons episode where they parodied that, where there was some band called Stargazer or something, and they were all like Homer and Apu and
Barney?
Kurt and whatever and Dr. Hibbert or something. They formed a rock band playing garage rock. And there was this band that they loved that wanted to do a reunion. And then they found that the Apu was a dead ringer for the original lead singer.
Oh,
They recruit Apu from Homer's band, and Homer and the guys are all pissed off. And Apu goes and becomes a star, but then he finds that it was basically like a slavery contract for Apu to deliver, what the other singer did. He wasn't really a member of the band. He was just like a minimum wage employee who was just slave driven to do what they wanted him to do. So it was parodying that whole concept of these YouTube sensations joining these bands. Although I'm dragging on here,
Well,
James, but
but
the
that's fine.
counterexample to that would be Angel, who sings in Journey, who became really a legit lead singer of Journey, even when they were, I thought that was really classy on Steve Perry's part when they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he gave a wonderful tribute to the band, and he even gave a huge shout out to Angel, saying, he's the guy, he delivers on the vocals. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, that's nice. One more question before we let you go. And this is going to be the hardest question yet.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Harder than the four,
Harder than Mount
four.
Rushmore? Okay.
Yeah, right. Okay, so is there one band, artist, or album that you can listen to right now, but you can't tell me, your wife, your sons, how it makes you feel deep inside your soul?
That I couldn't tell anybody how it makes me feel inside my soul.
Right. It's so you have no way of expressing how it makes you feel. You know, if you have even something like that,
No, I don't.
you
No,
don't.
I think I could probably put words on most of them. I mean, I could put
Okay.
words to it, but it wouldn't, I mean, that's the point. If words could capture it, it wouldn't be music. It's a language unto itself.
Exactly.
I think some of the no, I no 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 I'm gonna go back on that. I'm gonna go back
Okay.
on that. I think some of the nostalgia that I hear when I listen, for example, to like I'll get my voice is cracking even thinking about it. Like when I listen to parts of Abbey Road and I think about being in the family room as a kid and hearing that song, even those songs, Golden Slumbers, and the nostalgia. It's like, oh, I love this. I could tell my kids, I love this song when I was a kid. Or I could tell you, oh man, I remember hearing this when I was a kid. But those feelings are not something that I can
Exactly.
express.
Yes.
Almost,
Exactly.
it's almost you feel the taste in your mouth or the smell in your nose that takes you back somewhere when you hear those songs. So, yeah, I would say the one that sticks out the most to me is Abbey Road. That really has such nostalgic
Yeah.
value to me.
That's a beautiful album too, man. You know, that's a really powerful album, man. And I heard that it was they're gonna be called Mount Rushmore or something instead
Himalaya,
of
Himalayas or
yeah,
Mount
something like
Everest,
yeah, something like that, which I don't think it could, I don't think it would be as prominent as Abbey Road. You know, that's perfect title, perfect cover, everything about that album is perfect, you know.
yeah,
So
sure is.
yeah. We want to thank you here at One Word Sale for coming on the show. And for everybody listening, you can go to the agency.com. It's AJJANCY.com. And you can find George on Apple Music, Facebook, Instagram, Spotify, TikTok, X, YouTube, and more,
Everywhere,
right? Everywhere,
wherever
everywhere.
music is sold these days, or wherever music is
That's
streamed
right.
these days, you'll
Yeah.
find me. But James, thank you so much, not just for taking this hour with me, but for all you do, and even the title of your podcast, it really sums it all up, right? I mean, that's why we're doing all of this. It comes back to your last question, which is, yeah, what would you not be able to explain? I mean, that's really the whole point. It's really, really great that you asked that as the final question. Excuse me. And thank you for all that you do, highlighting me and even and all the other artists that you talk to. Because we're a community, we're all trying here. We don't have the big bucks of the record labels
No.
like in years past. And so we got to count on each other to try to tell these stories and get the word out. And I appreciate it. I really do.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate you coming on because, like, because I'm doing this for all musicians, you know, that I'm interviewing because I think that your music has to be heard by the millions instead of this candy coated rock pop crap that's on radio right now. You know, it's all what they want you to hear. You know, but people need to hear your music because your music is such a like a breath of fresh air. You know,
Thank you so much.
so
That means a lot to me.
yeah, no
I
problem.
really hope others have the same reaction. It means a lot to me. Thank you,
All right.
James.
All right. And can you tell us when your second single for your other son will come out? Did you said in
That song,
July?
so Blackbird is out
But yes.
now. That's out end of August. June 1st is my piano cover of More Than Words, and then July 13th, when my son turns 11 years old, will be a song called Jude and I dedicated to him. So that's in the time frame, and then there's other ones come after, but yeah, those are the we talked about in depth. Those are the ones coming out in the next couple months. I'm really excited about it. I look forward to seeing this live and be able to cut it up and use it and use words as also as part of the promotion and
That's right.
hopefully alert more people to the great stuff that you're doing as well.
Yes,
So
sir. Yes, sir.
thank
Thank
you
you.
again, James. It's terrific.
Thank you so much. Thank you so
All
much
right.
for coming on. All right. And
Have a
with
good
that said, everybody, thank you for listening. And always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.